In the past 50 years, legislation and legal cases have redefined what proper conduct in the workplace is. Even so, old thinking and new technologies mean workplace misbehavior persists. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we bring in Dr. Bruce Lease to examine the psychology behind behavior in the workplace. But we're going to throw in a twist. We'll ask a workplace attorney what actions on the job violate the law. From bullying to jokes to X-rated emails, it's workplace misbehavior. We're going to examine what's right, what's wrong, and what could get you sued. All that's ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. Different workplace environments call for different behavior. But one thing all offices have in common is that no one wants to hear the phrase, "Got a minute? Human resources would like to talk to you." This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. On today's program, misbehavior in the workplace, the psychology behind the misbehavior, and the potential legal consequences. With us once again to help us through these conundrums is Dr. Bruce Lease, professor of family medicine at KU. And we're going to shake up our live, live work environment with Kathy Perkins of Kathy Perkins LLC, a workplace law and mediation firm based in Lawrence, Kansas. Welcome to the show once again, Dr. Lease, and Kathy Perkins, welcome as well.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you, Jabalani.
Now, Dr. Lease, let's define workplace misbehavior first. Psychologically, Dr. Lease, what is it?
Well, you would expect people to know what misbehavior in the workplace is, but one of the reasons we're doing this show is that obviously not everybody knows. So technically, are there behaviors that violate social, psychological, organizational, workplace norms? They threaten the well-being of people and the organization, and they can be abusive. It can be subtle sabotage. It can be decreased productivity. As a psychologist, I'm interested in the stuff like moodiness and provocativeness and excessive self-disclosure and gossiping and whining and lying, and the list goes on and on. But those are the more subtle behaviors that some people don't even know they're doing when they misbehave in the workplace.
While excessive self-disclosure is encouraged at a talk show, not so much in the workplace, Kathy Perkins, how do we then delve into legal definitions?
Well, Jabalani, there are a lot of laws that define employer obligations and employee rights in the workplace. But when we're talking about misbehavior, what comes to my mind are the civil rights laws. And those are the ones that prohibit discrimination or harassment in the workplace on the basis of race, sex, national origin, color, religion, disability, both mental and physical, or age, that is, if you're over 40, which the law defines as old.
Lots of precedents based on those parameters that you laid out for civil rights violations. But legally, the claims, at least among parties, seem to be subjective based on perceptions of injured parties. How do you navigate that area legally? Is it based on policy and procedure or the individual workplace, or do you lean on precedents, legal precedents?
All of the above. And since the laws were enacted, the courts have struggled with how to interpret whether any particular story of what happened in the workplace actually crosses that line and becomes illegal. And a lot of standards have been created. Like, for example, in determining whether illegal harassment has occurred, the courts are going to look at, was the conduct unwelcome? Was it severe or pervasive? Did it create a hostile working environment because of the employee's protected status, race, color, religion, and so on?
And that's the burden of proof that has to be proved in that sense.
Right, right.
Do the worlds often intersect, Dr. Lease, where you're asked to come in and look at the psychology of a disagreement and then pass your findings on for legal remedies? Do those worlds ever intersect?
Oh, I'm very careful to have that defined before I get into a situation. I have worked in a number of large organizations, and that experience is the most interesting to me. I will have somebody come to me and say, would you help us out with this? And I make it really clear that I want to make it separate, totally unrelated. I don't want any part of the legal aspect. That's why I thought it'd be particularly fun to work with Kathy, because I try to stay away from any hint that I know the laws regarding workplace misbehavior.
Having said that, what psychological components can lead someone psychologically to flout the law or the policy, as it were?
Well, there's an interesting statistic. One study found that 75% of employees steal from their workplace. Helping people figure out whether taking a paperclip or an envelope is theft is it's not the most fascinating work in the world, but it's a stepping stone for helping people understand the boundaries that, you know, you are working for somebody. Not everything that's theirs is yours. So helping people understand essentially the norms and the difference between threatening behavior and non-threatening behavior. I'm always hearing in a large workplace environment, I'm always hearing people push the limits of humor, for example. And humor taken too far, I'm sure Kathy can tell you, becomes illegal. Is that right?
Not everything is funny. Right, Kathy?
Absolutely not everything is funny. And after 25 years of hearing these things that people will do and say to one another at the workplace, I love the opportunity to sit here with Bruce and say, why do they do that? Why did you send that by email? Why did you say that? Why did you think that group of employees who reported to you were laughing at your jokes because they were funny?
So, Dr. Bruce Leese, you start with the psychology behind why someone would send an illicit email or send or forward an inappropriate email. What is the psychology behind that? And then we'll have Kathy Perkins come in on the legal side and say what the consequences are.
Well, let's start with the social psychology. For most people, the workplace is a second home. So they feel like they are surrounded, and that's why it's social psychology. They feel like they're surrounded by family. And most people will not act in public with strangers the way they would with their own family. So the familiarity and the long hours and all of that stuff, the old expression familiarity breeds contempt, being around people for extended periods of time and kind of letting your guard down can lead to doing things that are inappropriate. There are things like the absence of emotional intelligence, chronic anger problems, hypersexuality, things that people carry around inside of them if they're not resolved. Just bad judgment. There are so many psychological processes that can lead people to do the wrong things because they feel like, I'm at home. You know, this is my job.
And what's made people feel like the workplace is home or the workplace is commensurate with family values?
I believe that most people spend most of their time in the workplace rather than with family. I believe that 40 hours a week for most people is the biggest block of time. And then there's also the intimate relationships that are formed.
I was going to say at least the time that they're awake.
Right. Yeah.
And I think after as many people as I've talked to have been involved in these workplace kind of claims, I think people really invest a lot of themselves in the workplace. It's what they do. It's what they're proud of. And it matters to them a lot. And so they bring a lot of high emotion, but they also need approval.
And speaking of that approval, how have workplace perceptions on the traditionally discriminatory patterns involving gender and race evolved legally, Kathy Perkins? And then psychologically, we'll go to Bruce Leese.
Well, we talk a lot about the TV series Mad Men for those who may have heard it. And I think that there's a lot of – it's realistic in the sense of the sort of sexual misbehavior that was once tolerated in the workplace. And I will not say that that's completely gone, and I do encounter pretty blatant situations from time to time. But the norms have certainly changed with – these laws that prohibit harassment and discrimination with, I think, a better understanding that we all have a right to work in a workplace free from being harassed because of who we are, and the understanding that diverse workplaces are more productive and that, you know, they offer a lot more. And so as times have changed, as the courts have interpreted these laws and slapped employers on the hand big time in some situations, I think behavior has generally gotten better.
So when I am at work and I hear somebody mindlessly refer to somebody as sweetie or honey, or I see inappropriate touching, I think, boy, what's wrong with their minds? I'm curious about when it became – I imagine that it's not legal to use terminology that's sexist like that. Is that sexist terminology?
You know, if
– That sounds like a lot of paperwork if honey and sweetie isn't legal. So can you explain?
Yeah, that's what I want.
I wouldn't say it that way. You know, Bruce, we work together and you call me sweetie. I haven't been illegally harassed by you, but it's the type of behavior that if it becomes pervasive or it's severe, you know, if you say sweetie and then, you know, do some major groping move, that could be severe and that might be illegal harassment. But it's all in context. And, you know, the fact of the matter is it's a lot of times it's what's in your head. And if someone looks at a female in the workplace and they say, sweetie, and they're 75 years old and they're just not thinking anything negatively at all, it probably has no impact.
Probably got to let it go.
And you say 75 because it's culturally – the norms then were different than they are now, I think, right?
Or if they're 75 and the person in question, the sweetie in question as it were – is 25, they might be looking at that person as a granddaughter.
Right. And you can't say that categorically that, you know, because there are plenty of 75-year-olds who might engage in sexual harassment that's illegal at the workplace. But I mean it more in context. And it's, you know, and when I do training to managers, I always say, if it's in your head, you're probably projecting it. So if you compliment a woman on what she's wearing and you're thinking, whoa, she is hot, that's probably going to come out in your voice or your eyes or something. So if that's what you're thinking, don't say it.
Can you be sued for eye groping, Kathy?
I have definitely had sexual harassment claims in which one of the allegations was what I sometimes call the elevator eyes.
The elevator eyes.
Yes, up and down.
Wow. You're listening to Central Standard live on 89.3 KCUR and streaming live in real time on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We're talking workplace misbehavior and elevator eyes with Dr. Bruce Lease and Kathy Perkins, a specialist in workplace legal issues. We're working through those definitions. She's an attorney with her own firm based in Lawrence, specializing in workplace law. Kansas City, here's your chance to offer your least favorite workplace scenarios and seek both psychological and legal remedies for entertainment purposes only. We've got it like that on Central Standard. Entertainment purposes only. Give us a call at 816-235-2888, 816-235-2888, or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Feel free to remain anonymous if you want to call in with a workplace scenario that you might even be experiencing right now. Once again, the number is 816-235-2888. Let's get into some examples of misbehavior in the workplace from a psychological perspective, Dr. Lease. Moodiness?
Oh, okay. That'd be great. There are patterns of behavior that people engage in that really don't work in any context, but in particular, they don't work in the workplace. If somebody is relatively withdrawn in general, it's not good for them anywhere. But in particular, at the workplace, it's not going to be a good situation. If they get tense easily, angry easily, withdrawn easily, anxious easily, if you are prone to moods, the worst place to manifest that is in the workplace. Because other people who don't have the authority to say, you know, I don't want to sit next to somebody who's grumpy all the time. Because other people don't have the authority to stop you, you're making their lives miserable. The coworkers are one of the top reasons why people are either happy or unhappy in their jobs. So Moodiness is a big one, and a moody person tends to be outspoken and provocative, or they can be withdrawn, and that can be provocative.
And then other common sort of psychological components may include gossip or whining and complaining or defensiveness or passive-aggressive behavior.
Yes. Even boredom can become a workplace problem if the solution to a person's boredom is what's called, and I love this term, cyber loafing.
Cyber loafing.
Yeah, cyber loafing is when people aren't engaged in work and they end up on the computer surfing the net all the time. In fact, I love looking at all these little research studies before these shows because it's just fascinating stuff. In one study, 90% of people admitted to surfing the internet when they should be working. 84% admitted that they send non-work-related email, and on and on. There's a lot of cyber loafing, and that is misbehavior if you're supposed to be working and you're doing it because you're bored or not engaged.
So basically, by that standpoint, it's wrong to be like, hey, Bruce, I'm checking out Central Standard right now. This is crazy. This reminds me of our boss.
Yeah, right.
I'm listening to it right now. Check it out. Hey, check it out. And I'm leaning over to you, and I'm saying, hey, check it out. How does State of Mind, Kathy Perkins, play in legal issues, state of mind with misbehavior in the workplace?
Well, it has everything to do with being at the root of it, but sometimes an employer is limited in what they can address because, well, they certainly don't have Bruce's expertise, but really their focus needs to be on how you're acting, how you're behaving. So if you've got someone who's being moody or passive-aggressive or even a bully, the employer needs to address how they're behaving and how that behavior is affecting others, but always keeping in mind that some of these things could be symptoms or signs of perhaps a mental disability or something that someone needs treatment for, and employers have to tread very carefully there.
But you can't sue anybody for being emo and listening to emo records next to you in the cubicle next to you.
You probably can't.
You can't. You can't. We're going to go to Susan in Perry. Susan, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Susan.
Yes, hello. Hello. I just had a comment to make about a statement your guest made. I feel it is demeaning when a male colleague or boss refers to me as honey, darling, or sweetie. That diminishes my status. That elevates theirs. And if I were to refer to my male colleagues and bosses as honey, darling, or sweetie, it would be taken very differently than the way that they expect me to take it when they refer to me with those names.
What do you think of that, Kathy?
I think that is a great way to point out the difference between what's appropriate workplace behavior and what might be actionable, illegal sexual harassment in the workplace. Because I agree with Susan 100%. I don't like being called honey or sweetie, and I do think sometimes it's an attempt at a put-down. But one comment alone or even a few alone might not give rise to a legal claim.
And that's an interesting point that Susan brings up. Thank you, Susan, for your comments. How about the legal perspective? When do all of these psychological determinants become actionable legal issues? What's the breaking point?
Well, it's less the psychological determinants than the behaviors themselves that we're talking about. And as I said before, it becomes an actionable claim under the civil rights laws if the conduct is unwelcome, if the conduct is based on someone's sex or their national origin or a disability status, if it's severe or pervasive such that it creates a hostile working environment.
So we're establishing a pattern again in this conversation that patterns have to be established, such as people not being able to take no for an answer or escalating flirtatious situation or excessive behavior, excessive email forwarding. It has to be a pattern.
Generally, it does.
Unless it's something, a one-time, like, crazy thing, like to do jumping out of the airline on JetBlue.
Or three times if it's more severe. You know, and unfortunately for employers and employees, we can't always predict whether any particular scenario is going to be ultimately found to violate the law.
816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We're going to go to Liz in Liberty for our conversation on workplace misbehavior. Liz, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you very much, Jabalani. I enjoy your show almost every day.
Thank you.
And good morning to your two guests. More of a comment, and I'm asking for a comment back. I'm retired now. Several years ago, for 20 years, I worked as a college admissions counselor. They had come into the college to do some renovations in the admissions area where we worked. Because I had an arthritic knee at the time, it was difficulty for me walking in and out sometimes. I never asked for a special accommodation. They were nice enough initially to offer a little bit of extra help, putting me up at the front, et cetera. But every day during that renovation, I had to listen to, well, we're doing this for you. You know, we're doing this special for you. And I became embarrassed after a while. As I said, I'm now retired, but as I reflect back, I just wondered what the comment of your guests might be for them harassing me in this manner.
Well, Liz, that's a great opportunity to talk about the Americans with Disabilities Act and what it protects in the workplace, because you're prohibited from discrimination because of a disability, but it also goes a step further and requires a reasonable accommodation of a disability, which in your case, they would have been required to provide that accommodation. But you're also protected from harassment or retaliation because you requested that accommodation. And if we were talking and you were still working, I would encourage you to go to Human Resources and say, I really think that I'm being retaliated against, or I'm not feeling comfortable with this accommodation you're making.
Liz, I'm curious as to why you didn't file a grievance at the time. Did you not feel it necessary to file a grievance?
No, I wasn't intimidated at all. I did go through the proper channels. I started with my department manager. He said he would pass it on to the campus director, who called me into his office. Never really apologized, never really addressed the initial issue at hand. Kind of skirted around it a little bit. Well, we're doing the best we can. We're trying to help you out. And as I said, I never really asked for that accommodation. It was offered to put me at the front of the group of counselors, which was, I thought, nice initially, until I had to listen to this daily haranguing of, you know, we're doing this for you. So I eventually just gave up and I retired.
Well, I think it's unfortunate that a lot of people in management positions don't really understand how to lead people well and what their obligations under the law. And I think there are a lot of reasons why they're just afraid to deal with situations like that. And I think Bruce has probably got better ideas than I do on why that is.
And Dr. Lees, there are psychological issues when there's management deterrent to actually complaining, which create a sort of psychological distress. When they feel that their grievances won't be addressed in a timely or efficient or sensitive manner, they act up.
Yeah. In my list of misbehavior in the workplace, I include ineffective management, management that's too passive, that doesn't intervene in a way that's effective, or too aggressive when they intervene in a way like they're Rambo. So, you know, the responsibility of management is to really deal with problems like this in the workplace so that they don't get out of hand, so that everybody understands everybody. And this could have been avoided completely by a good manager stepping in and saying, you know, this isn't necessary. We're doing this because we care about you. That's all it would have taken.
When do differences of opinion or different psychological quirks or worldviews escalate, Kathy, to become legal issues?
Well, that can happen in a lot of different ways. I mean, one example would be in the days after 9/11 in 2001, different political views, people who may have been Muslim were experiencing some hostility at the workplace that might have crossed that line into illegal harassment. As the times change, as behaviors that are, I don't know, bullying or inappropriate start to come from places that relate to someone's protected status, that's when we start to cross over to the line into what's illegal.
I find one of the most interesting psychological phenomena. Do we have time for this? Shall we take a break? Okay. One of the most interesting psychological phenomena of all is when two people engage with each other in offensive ways and enjoy the conversation without regard to the person beside them who's offended. They may think, I'm not doing anything wrong because I'm making my buddy laugh. But that is just as destructive.
At Dr. Bruce Lisa's suggestion, we're going to take a break. He's a professor of family medicine at KU, and we're shaking up our live work environment with a discussion on workplace misbehavior issues with Kathy Perkins, who's also a guest. Kathy Perkins, LLC, Workplace Law and Mediation. We'll be right back. We'd like to hear your thoughts. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Call in and let's work it out. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. When it comes to workplace politics, everyone has their story and sticks to it. Everybody has their grievances, and different psychological motivations abound. But there's the good, the bad, and then there's the illegal. Helping us sort through both the red flags and red tape of workplace misbehavior are Dr. Bruce Lease, professor of family medicine at KU, and Kathy Perkins, an attorney with her own firm based in Lawrence, specializing in workplace law. Kathy Perkins, what do you say to critics of politically correct culture who say strict policies have created an artificial politeness when the environment is just too sensitive and people are afraid to say what they really think, and that creates the type of passive-aggressive behavior that Dr. Lease has been talking about?
Well, I think people say that sometimes, but they really don't have that much time to stay at that level of high tension and moderation of their behavior. And generally, because they do spend so much time at work, that kind of falls off. But I do have a couple of thoughts. And one is, you know, if people can sometimes use political correctness to get themselves into trouble, like, I would tell you, you look nice, but that wouldn't be politically correct. Or I can think of a million other examples. But the other thing is they may use that as a way of behaving or complaining about someone to get them in trouble. You know, I don't like you and you sit next to me because you're playing emo all the time. I might go in and make a kind of nitpicky complaint about
it. Or a snide comment that says, I can't say that anymore. You can say it, but I can't say that anymore. Ha, 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 ha. What do you think of that, Dr. Bruce Lease?
I have some really strong feelings about the concept of politically correct. When I am faced with an employee who is clearly misbehaving and crossing lines and bothering people, I will try to explain empathy towards them. I'll try to explain that if you could put yourself in the other person's shoes, and they refuse to see it as their problem, as an absence of empathy, and what do they put in its way? They say, well, okay, I know you want me to say the politically correct thing. The issue isn't political correctness. It is really the presence or absence of empathy for the other human beings that you will be affecting with your language, et cetera. So when someone talks about political correctness as the reason why they aren't saying something, I know they're at risk for getting themselves into trouble and making other people really uncomfortable.
And behaving badly. Tricia in Lenexa, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi. I was calling because my question was, I just quit my job after 3 years because of just blatant hostility in the workplace. And I was just wondering, at what point does that become illegal? For example, things were thrown in a room. I was cursed at. Other employees would be cursed at. And it reached the climax a week ago when a very large item was thrown in the room. And it's never at me or at other employees, but it's still going on. So I'm wondering, you know, does someone actually have to get hurt for something that, you know, for legal action to be taken, or is it just taken on face value that this is still threatening and still a show, even though it's from far away?
Kathy, blackberries are flying, trash cans are being kicked, cuss words are being hurled. When does that become a legal issue?
Well, under the civil rights laws, and it becomes illegal when that behavior is motivated by protected status. So if this is very unfortunate, but sometimes an employer will actually defend against a manager that's behaving in ways like this by saying, oh, they treat everybody badly. Oh, you know, this is like an equal opportunity jerk.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, there may be other laws that come into play. OSHA, mm-hmm. OSHA, for example, sets workplace safety requirements, and having a large object thrown in your proximity may well violate some of their laws and could provide the basis for a complaint. There are common laws and statutory laws against assault and battery. And assault mm-hmm. may be something that puts you in fear or apprehension of impending danger. And so there are some other kinds of remedies that somebody might have. And,
mm-hmm.
and I would always encourage someone who's experiencing a workplace like this to find someone to complain to that's got more power than the person that's behaving in that way.
Was this mm-hmm. the top guy, Tricia, that was doing this?
It was. And then when I complained to the manager staff because, you know, previously, you know, a pack had been thrown across the room.
A what?
A surgery pack had been thrown across the room that I was told, well, you know, it's really hard for me to keep this job, too. I understand if you need to leave and move on.
Sounds like you're in the medical field.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Bruce Lease. Paging
no comment on that. It's just awful that those things happen to people.
Yeah.
It's awful that it happened to you. I assume that you will go to another place that treats you better and that you'll bring your competencies and charming personality.
Absolutely.
And you won't have to worry about somebody treating you like that in the next place, I hope and expect.
And Tricia, you'll be able to say, this is nothing. They threw surgery packs at my last job.
Let me say something here. The big issue is vulnerability. When you're in a workplace as an employee and your boss, manager, or employer is mistreating you, it's double vulnerability. One level of vulnerability is the attack itself, but the other level of vulnerability is your livelihood and your job.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important to take good care of yourself through these kinds of things. And it sounds like that's what you're doing.
Yes, it's definitely deflating for sure.
Thank you, Tricia, for your thoughts. Dr. Lease, how often does psychopathology lead to misbehavior at work? The guy that's hurling these surgery packs and kicking these trash cans and yelling at the top of his lungs, self-control problems, inadequacy problems, anger problems.
When I hear that somebody has reached that level of violence, I assume there's psychopathology. Now, if I went to the person who was throwing things and told them that, of course, they would deny it. But that's part of psychopathology, a lack of self-awareness, a lack of insight. Four personality disorders come to mind because they are so toxic in the workplace. Borderline personality, which involves intense emotional shifts. Narcissistic personality, where people engage in kind of self-declared superiority, they're above the rules, etc. Histrionic personality, where people are very dramatic, need to be the center of attention. And antisocial personality, preying on other people's vulnerabilities. Those four put together create a pretty big pool, a pretty big segment of society. And those people have to work somewhere, and hopefully it's not in the desk next to yours.
Kathy Perkins, how does environment or industry play in? Obviously, if you have an investment banking guerrilla atmosphere, if you have a media, Hollywood, fast pace, yell at the competition, yell to get it done atmosphere versus a nonprofit that produces bobbleheads for children through a church, you know, how do you approach those different situations?
Well, the courts interpret the laws against discrimination, harassment in the workplace based on the culture. So it's going to be very different what the standards of behavior, what the acceptable norms are at a construction work site, for example, than at the nonprofit that you mentioned. The kinds of behaviors that are tolerated or expected are simply going to change. But you still end up with some of these same psychopathology types of folks in all of those workplaces.
bobbleheads can be stressful.
Yes, they can. And people throw things, but they're less tolerated in some workforces.
Speaking of culture, an anonymous caller asks, when do cultural differences come into play? The husband's company, administered by a Middle Eastern nationals, this anonymous caller's husband has a company run by Middle Eastern nationals. Female employees are not treated equally. This caller wants to know if culture can be used as an excuse to treat workers unfairly, to discriminate against them.
No, not in that context. And it may be that culturally somebody, by virtue of where they were born or religion, does have an honestly held belief that women should be subordinate to men at all times. But that doesn't mean the laws against discrimination don't apply, other than possibly in a religious organization where there would be an exemption. You know, for example, Catholic churches don't have to make women priests under the discrimination laws because of that discrimination exemption. But so when we say culturally we look at different types of workplaces, we're not going to make an exception just because somebody has their own beliefs about how women should be treated.
Dr. Lees, how does a dysfunctional organization or organizational culture or high-stress environment play into behavior?
Well, if people are pretty well put together psychologically, they will generally adapt well to difficult situations. Not impossible, but difficult situations. And they'll find ways of problem solving and coping. And they may even have a positive impact on the environment. So it's less stressful, more healthy, more adaptive. I've actually known people who work in very stressful environments that do whatever they can to make it a better environment. If you go in with vulnerabilities like insecurities and anxieties and vulnerability to depression, a difficult environment can really break you. It can be dangerous to your well-being. I do want to comment, if it's okay, on the question of cultural differences. I am proud to say that at the medical center, KU Med, we have a vast array of different cultures, people working in all different departments doing all kinds of things. And at the educational side that I'm on, we get people from all different countries and cultures. And the people I know in that situation are very receptive to coaching on what works here and what doesn't work here, especially with patient care. And it's not that you shouldn't break the law by bringing your culture here. It's more like, we respect your culture and we want you to be highly effective in this culture. So here's how these things go.
Kathy, we have another caller who shall not be named that says, I've worked at the same team at work for 35 years and some have behaved badly all the time, ignoring requests for change of that behavior at times and pass it off as, oh, that's just so-and-so's normal behavior. The caller wants to know, how does the caller continue to ignore both psychologically and legally damaging things that caller thinks are happening in this team that the caller has been on for 35 years?
Well, I would encourage anybody that feels that they're working in an environment that's hostile, that's inappropriate, to report that. Your employer should have a complaint reporting procedure. Take it to human resources or whoever is designated and let them know. Keep examples of it. If some of this behavior comes from an email, keep a copy of the email so that you can say, this is what's happening to me, or take notes at the time so that you can get more credibility when you bring that to the attention of management.
You're listening to Central Standard, live on 89.3 KCUR, streaming in real time on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We're talking workplace misbehavior with Dr. Bruce Lees, professor of family medicine at KU. And we've also expanded our literal and figurative human resources department to sort through those definitions and issues with Kathy Perkins, an attorney, of her own firm based in Lawrence, specializing in workplace law. Kansas City, here's your chance to offer at least your favorite workplace scenarios and your least favorite workplace scenarios and seek both psychological and legal remedies. We got it like that on Central Standard. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Dr. Lise, what are the common thoughts of those who misbehave in the workplace?
They are there are many. I was thinking about all this, so I made a list of common thoughts of people who misbehave. I'll get away with it. I'm not bothering anyone. I'll get what I want like I always do. That would be the thought of a narcissist or an antisocial person. He or she will be impressed or flattered by my flirtations or behaviors. It was only a slap on the butt. Why is everybody reacting so strongly? There's nothing wrong with a woman being called honey. Now, I want to stop in the middle of this list and say these are things people think that they shouldn't think.
Okay? Right.
They shouldn't think these things. I didn't do anything wrong. It's always somebody else. I'm so funny, cool, sexy, admired. I'm the victim here. I'm just being criticized because I'm different. There are so many thoughts that people hang on to justify or to support their misbehavior.
Is thinking you're sexy, cool, and admired illegal, Kathy Perkins?
It can get you into some hot water if you carry it too far.
Right.
Which is, as Bruce was going through that list, I was thinking, I do a lot of training on sexual harassment and appropriate workplace behavior to employees and managers. And especially with managers, I try to motivate them in different ways to follow the rules. I mean, some people are motivated out of fear of publicity or they want to look good. So I can tell them, if you get sued for this, everyone's going to know, including your wife and your bosses. Some people are motivated by money. You could lose your job. You could get personally sued. You could have to pay money. Some people are motivated by just a need to do the right thing. And so those take into account all these sort of excuses that people come up with for behaving in ways that kind of know they ought not behave in.
South Kansas City.
Yes.
Welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, thank you. What I was calling about, pardon me, I go into a bar. I'm retired from management in a big corporation. I've been through the training and stuff, and I think I know what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. But anyways, I see a woman bartender being harassed by the owners and the customers very obvious what do you call it? What's the word? Innuendos?
Innuendos.
Innuendos.
In the window, too. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's looking through the window. I don't know.
No, but I mean, they would be obvious to me, harassment in a corporate setting. And my question probably is, how many employees do you have to have at a company to be under the law?
Well, under the federal law, under Title VII, it's 15 employees. Under the Missouri Human Rights Act, it is 6. And under the Kansas Human Rights Act, it's 4. So
okay.
Even small employers are subject to these laws.
Yeah, and I don't think these places have enough employees that they can that they're probably covered. But, it's just that. I see and hear what would never should be tolerated in a corporate environment happening every day.
But this is in a bar, though, right?
Yes. But, I mean, just because you work in a bar doesn't
That's true.
Necessarily mean you, you know.
That's true. That's true, Mike. But I wanted to
sign up for that.
I wanted to slingshot that sort of thought to Kathy
yes.
Perkins. Wouldn't that be used as a legal defense, a plaintiff's attorney saying, you're in a bar?
They may say that, but we're talking about the bartender
right.
who is an employee
right.
who has the same rights as any other employee. And you say, okay, well, maybe the standard is a little different. For example, a bartender would probably be expected to handle a little more flirtation from customers maybe than somebody who works at the grocery store checkout counter. But they ought not be subjected to that conduct by those to whom they report.
Yeah, and let me mention one other thing. I remember a case that somewhat relates to this, which would be a bigger employer, and that was Hooters. They were after Hooters for the kind, probably the kind of conduct that I'm talking about, except it's a, it's an, at an employment establishment that has a lot more employees, and there should therefore should be maybe covered by the law.
Yep, a lot of employees at Hooters. Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome. Thank you.
An anonymous caller who works in a legal firm that's family owned. One of the employees is always making comments about one of the female employees' appearance. This caller has asked these people making these comments to stop, but it continues. The caller wants to know, how should she or he, excuse me, it's an anonymous caller, talk to the offending parties and get it to stop? And does this person have any legal recourse for defending this other person?
You actually do have some legal recourse for defending other people that you work with. And the courts have found that the protection against retaliation under the civil rights laws extends to those who provide testimony, who are witnesses, who may have some other association with it. So, and I wouldn't say – you can't ever say 100% because there could be facts I don't know, but there may very well be a claim there. I'd say talk directly. I find this offensive. You could be putting yourself at risk. If it's a – and I know that it was a small firm, it may be that going and talking with an attorney outside that organization or even the Missouri Commission on Human Rights or the EEOC or the Kansas Human Rights Commission.
What are the common ways, Kathy Perkins, that people try to skate that legal line, maybe still do wrong in the eyes of others, but act within the parameters of policy and procedure so as not to violate legal things?
Well, a lot of people think that they're skating along that line, but unfortunately for them, that line isn't all that clear. And you know, they say bad facts make bad law. And the worse the story, the more likely a court is to find something illegal. Like, for example, the person that you harassed, it turns out that that person had just lost a child recently, and they're very sympathetic.
That'll do it.
And so skating close to the line is ill-advised. But you said, how do they do it? A lot of times they try to do it in ways that are secret.
Such as
comments under their breath, making sure there's no witnesses around. Not doing it in any way where there's a track record that comes back to them.
And what is the psychological motivation for this type of behavior, Dr. Lease?
The type of behavior where people skate along.
Skate the line or do things in private where they know they won't get caught. Or...
Back to that first common thought of people who misbehave, I'll get away with it. And then behind that, there's probably I'm not doing anything wrong and I have a right to my feelings and nobody needs to know. Those are all examples of the kinds of thoughts and the kinds of processes that reinforce that.
Vic in KCMO, welcome to Central Standard.
Yeah, I repair kitchen equipment, restaurant kitchen equipment, and walk-in freezers. And every time I go in to repair kitchen equipment, there's always a female manager, and they always accuse me of ripping them off because – or they're rude to me or mean to me because they don't understand what I'm doing there. And when I try to give them the bill, they say, oh, you're just taking advantage of me because I'm a female and you're a male. Is that sexual harassment for them being hostile towards me?
Interesting question. Vic?
Well, I will say first that the laws protect you from anyone you encounter in your workplace, including third-party vendors or customers. So if their behavior did meet the sexual harassment, possibly, this would be what I would call more like gender-based harassment, like assumptions about you because you're a man. But I would encourage you to talk with your employer about it. And then also look at whether there are patterns developing about why and when people respond to you that way.
Have you heard about or seen – thank you, Vic, for your comments. Have you heard about or seen, Kathy, more cases of maybe sensitive females or sensitive minority groups sort of jumping the gun and being preemptive like Vic describes? You're just walking into a place and the person is saying, you're treating me like this because I'm a woman or you're doing something, leveling an accusation before something actually happens. We don't know the story with Vic, but he feels persecuted almost preemptively, it sounds like.
it happens a lot. And I mean, I think and sometimes maybe it's because somebody's had complaints made or they've had harassment happen to them previously. But I have seen I've had a lot of clients have called and said, this new employee says, I sued my last employer. You can't treat me that way because of my race. And it makes it very challenging for management.
Dr. Lease.
I see a lot of people who claim to be the victims of other people's misbehavior. And it's a very fine line to walk as a clinician and I'm sure as an attorney to try to establish whether or not the person is what you call preempting, where they're always saying somebody done me wrong. And so anytime I work with anybody, I try to respect and understand what happened and what they mean when they say other people did this to me or they did this to me because of my color, my gender, my age. I like to first do a really careful and thorough inventory of all the other potential competing hypotheses. It could be that or it could be somebody can approach people with that kind of defensive stance. I know you're going to do this to me because of my religion, my race. Just approaching people with that in your mind telegraphs to them some defensiveness on their part. It takes two to tango. It takes two to have messes like this. And I always encourage people to self-reflect before they attribute it to some kind of criminal behavior outside of their control. I'd like to say one other thing. A couple of people, a caller and Kathy, talked about different cultures and different work cultures and different expectations. I have worked in many different environments, and it is it's just common sense that if you want a more serene, more peaceful, less rowdy, maybe less careless group of people, you go to one kind of environment. If you have a high degree of sensitivity to emotional pain, I would recommend you stay away from environments where it's acceptable to just be rowdy and silly and goofy and crazy. To go into a place that you know is going to be where people will be lewd and crude and not self-aware and then to complain about it is unwise, even if it's the job that you think you want more than any other job in the whole world.
I think the best way to sum up this discussion is from our caller Bonnie, who had this comment. I do think that victims of harassment, aggression, hostility, etc., have a responsibility as well to respond to the aggressor by telling them they don't like their particular behavior. You can avoid a lawsuit with that, right, Kathy Perkins?
You may very well.
We're talking workplace misbehavior with Dr. Bruce Lease, professor of family medicine at KU, and we've also expanded our literal and figurative human resource department to sort through these definitions with Kathy Perkins, who owns our own firm here in Lawrence, specializing in workplace law and mediation. Thank you for behaving yourselves, Dr. Lease and Kathy Perkins.
Thank you.
Thank you, Javelani.
And join us tomorrow as we examine the future of commercial real estate, plus we discuss risky behavior in business. Is it still risky business? With Harvard management professor and former Goldman Sachs vice chairman Robert Kaplan. Today's show is produced by Danny Alexander. Our show is produced by Andrea Salinzi. Up to Date is next with a look at modern manners. I'm Javelani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.